Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that isn't above paying a hefty price for a good movie. I personally can remember coughing soda through my nose at the very idea that one day I might be paying more than 10 bucks for a movie ticket. But, man, here's the caveat. All of us want quality for our money, and sometimes we get exactly what we pay for. That's what this particular show is all about. What we're going to do is look back at the past decade and list all the movies that each of us respectively thought were the best of the lot. Some are likely to be the same. Others, well, not so much, because all of us, and that includes you listeners out there in our radio audience, have our own perspectives. But yeah, a little disagreement has never stopped us before. Right, guys?
Oh, that's true. And, you know, I love a good list. I love the end of the year when we all get to make our lists, because even though it is kind of – well, not kind of. It is arbitrary. It's just kind of fun to take everything you've seen and sort of distill it down into kind of a bite-sized representation of basically what you thought of a given year, or in this case, a decade.
Yeah, and so what were the basis of your choices?
Well, this is much more difficult than a standard year-end list, because at the end of every year, we've seen, I don't know, 150 to 200 films that we have to choose from, and we have to winnow that down to 10. And usually, we're dealing with only a handful of movies that we would designate as great or worthy of a top 10 spot.
Right.
But here, we're dealing with thousands of movies, mm-hmm. and a lot of which have had the benefit of staying power. Movies that we saw years ago, and they've just grown in our estimations, grown in our minds, and we've had the ability and the luxury to see them more times. So this was actually really, really tough for me. But basically what I did is I kind of went back year by year and sort of looked at my three or four favorites from each given year. In a lot of cases, there were movies that were in their initial lists when we made them were down further than I would have put them now. And so they've kind of wormed their way up and bumped others off that might have been listed higher. But my criteria was, I mean, it's kind of mercurial. I didn't have a checklist. Basically, I just thought, which movies of the last 10 years have stuck with me the longest, that hit me at the time and hit me again, and movies that I still think about, that I still compare other movies to. And so I just kind of picked the 10 that either I've revisited the most or have kind of debated and thought about the most. And I also wanted to be sure that I was picking films by directors who mean a lot to me. So that kind of weighed on me as well.
What about you, Mary Pat?
Well, I characterize my list as the 10 films that made an impression on me. And so, again, similarly, not focusing so much on the director or anything else, but things that I remember scenes from that sort of affected me in some way. And they really run the gamut, because I also tried to make a bit of a conscious effort to go against my regular doc picks, although there are several on my list, and, you know, choose some from other genres, for example, comedy and animation, because I'm not a huge animation person, but there was an animated film during this decade that really did speak to me. And so I sort of looked at that as a jumping off point, and I know not everyone's going to agree with my list, but I think, feel confident about it.
Yeah. I think that we're all going to have problems here. And, you know, as for me, I think I'm somewhere in between both of you. I went back year by year and looked at the lists, and, you know, some of these movies, every one of these movies that on my list are movies that were on my top 10 list of those years, of that particular year. But, you know, you both know me and know that ultimately I'm a romantic. I'm just, you know, I cry at Kodak commercials. And so movies
is there a Kodak commercial on your top 10 list?
Probably. Movies that touched me, movies that just absolutely either massaged my heart or ripped it out of my chest, are movies that stayed with me. And so those are the ones that made my list. And I can make arguments for the quality of each one of them, either by great filmmakers or just being great instances of filmmaking. But, you know, ultimately, it's where my heart leads me.
And so we've now seen the three lists, each of our respective lists, and have compared and contrasted
and laughed a little bit.
Maybe. Yes, but what's kind of remarkable to me is of all the films that we had to choose from, there were three.
Thousands.
Yeah, there were three that were on all three of our lists, yes, which is actually more than I had expected. So should I reveal what those
yes,
three movies
should.
Are?
Yeah.
So these are the three movies that I guess based on just, you know, the unanimous opinion in the room are the three best of the decade, I suppose. Richard Linklater's Boyhood, that 12-year odyssey about a family in Texas. Moonlight, Barry Jenkins' film, Best Picture-winning film.
In 2016.
And, yes, and Alfonso Cuarón's Roma. Those are the three movies that were on all of our lists. And looking at them, what I find really interesting is I think all three of these films are about are the reason that we go to the movies, I think, because they're both about very, very specific people. About characters who we come to know, we understand their lives and, you know, their emotions and how they grow and change over the course of a film. But they're all about a very specific time and a very specific place, each of them. In the case of Roma, you've got 1970s Mexico. In the case of Moonlight, it's following one boy growing up into adulthood in Florida. And then in Boyhood, as I mentioned, I mean, that is a film about the passage of time, but it also captures America at a very specific point. So I think that's interesting that all of those films kind of have those distinctions.
I would also make the point that each one of these, in its way, is a distinctive style of film.
And vision, a very distinctive vision.
Exactly. Roma being black and white, being... Oh, I don't know. It has almost a dreamlike quality.
It's fantastic.
Which I could say the same thing about Moonlight.
Absolutely.
Moonlight is the same kind of thing. And Boyhood, what an achievement of filmmaking over all those years. Linklater, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you what, on my list, he shows up twice, strangely enough. You know, I mean, Richard Linklater has two films.
He's one of the best American filmmakers. I've been telling you for years.
Yes, exactly. But Boyhood itself... It just the far-reaching vision he had to say, I think I can make a movie about just how this kid has grown up.
But I think like Roma and Moonlight, even though Boyhood is the most earthbound of those films, I think that it's the way that it's structured, it's also kind of like a memory in a way.
A meditation on what it is to be a boy growing up.
Exactly. Because you only get these snapshots of each year in these people's lives. And it's not the big signpost that we think of when we reflect on a person's life. It's the little moments that somehow stick in your brain. And I think that both Roma and Moonlight have that quality
as
well.
And I think that's significant. I know I did a StoryCorps interview with my dad when he was 96 years old, right, a couple months before he died. And those are the things when I asked him about things that he remembered or things that were special to him. It was those types of things. It was not, ooh-hoo, you know, I mean, of course he mentioned the birth of his first daughter because that was the most significant thing for anyone. But yeah, so I like the fact that we can identify these things. And even if we don't agree with how this might have affected the individuals who are involved, you can see it, you can feel it, you can understand it.
And you look at something like Roma, which obviously has, I mean, it's about the history of a country at a particular time, and it has these kind of big set pieces, these big dramatic set pieces.
Class and...
Yes, and it's dealing with class, and it's dealing with race, and it's dealing with gender. But there are these little moments like the two housekeepers doing their exercises at night about the food that they get when they go to a restaurant, about the movies that they go to see, and the songs they hear on the radio. And Moonlight also has that specificity about it. And there's something that I find really, really moving about a movie that has that kind of vision that says, I'm not just concerned with the grand scope of this world and this person's life. I'm also concerned about the more quotidian aspects of their daily routines.
Right. And I think one of the things that we would all agree is an emphasis on the films of today are movies that tell stories of characters who traditionally have been ignored or always placed as secondary characters. And at least two of these movies, Roma and Moonlight, are about characters who, for decades and decades would not have even been mentioned in a movie, mm-hmm. much less featured. But even I can make that argument about Boyhood also. Even though it is about a boy, his mother, played by Patricia Arquette, is as important to everything that goes on as anyone else in the film.
She might be the most important character in that film, and I think there's a reason that she won the Academy Award for that performance, because when you walk away from Boyhood, it's her trajectory over the course of the film and Ethan Hawke's as the father. It's their trajectories that I think about more so than Mason, the little boy growing up, even though the moments of his life that I connected to were so relatable. I think more about the other two characters in that film.
Well, and I think that these focus on – I mean, there's an authenticity to these films that mm-hmm. we've pointed to, because, you know, oftentimes – and now it's a problem – we want to make these larger points, you know, through movies and so forth. And that does happen in these three films that we've identified, but in more subtle ways that I think seem more realistic and more genuine.
So obviously those are the three that we all agree upon. And now each of us has seven more that we're going to put down that we may not agree upon, but we'll get into those in the second half of the show. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to finish our respective lists of the best films of the past decade. You're listening to a special edition of Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
When you consider the future, please consider Spokane Public Radio in your estate plans. Your gift to the SBR Fund for the Future Endowment will ensure that access to real news, meaningful conversations, and great music will continue forever in our communities. One of the most impactful ways listeners can help is through planned gifts. Details are available from the business office at Spokane Public Radio, your tax accountant, attorney, or the Inovia Community Foundation. More information at SpokanePublicRadio.org/membership. And thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbender, and I discussed what we think were the best films of the past decade. I think we were just getting into the good stuff. Where did we leave off? Nathan?
Well, now we get into the stuff that we don't agree on. And so what I am proposing is that we each pick one movie off our respective lists that isn't on the other two lists. And we're going to justify its inclusion on our list of the best films of the decade. So Mary Pat, why don't you start with your outlier?
Well, apparently mine is the outlier because I've been badgered by my co-hosts about this particular selection, but I'm going to try to defend it. My outlier pick is Bridesmaids. And so that was from 2011, comedy, I assume people would agree. And it talks about a series of unfortunate events that ensue around this particular wedding, hence the name Bridesmaids. And so the three primary characters are Kristen Wiig, Rose Byrne, and Maya Rudolph. So already, and I think some people don't always think of Rose Byrne, at least at that point, as a comedic actor, but she really proved herself.
She's become one now. She's almost exclusively
in
comedies.
Yes, she has. And it also introduced us to Melissa McCarthy, at least as far as an on-screen presence. And I like the fact that it was all women. I mean, there are a few guys show up, John Hamm, Chris O'Dowd, but for the most part, this is a women's film.
Directed by a man, Paul Feig, but written by Kristen Wiig, co-written
by Kristen Wiig. And I still, among my group of friends, we still use little, you know, memes and so forth, excerpts from Bridesmaids. And I just laughed throughout the whole thing. And I wanted to put a comedy on my list, and this was my choice, and I'm sticking with it.
I like Bridesmaids.
All I would say is that, well, it certainly didn't make my list of the top 20 of the films of the decade. However, I did love Bridesmaids. Yeah. I'm just going to go
and
on record.
I think you still see its influence because it was a huge hit, and that kind of subgenre of ensemble comedies starring mostly women is, I mean, it's still a thing. You think about something like Girls Trip, which was another hit.
Right.
I don't know if we would have had that movie if it hadn't been for the success of Bridesmaids, and that, for better or for worse, the entire subgenre of Melissa McCarthy comedies, some of which are better than others. But yeah, no, I think you're still seeing the influence of that film in
modern
comedy.
Okay, let's do mine. Mine.
Yes.
Your outlier.
Yes, Danny.
Blue Jasmine, 2013 film by Woody Allen, the in many eyes of many moviegoers, the canceled Woody Allen. You know, his films just don't seem to be, wow, for various reasons, as popular as they once were.
Yeah.
But I would make the case that Blue Jasmine deserves to be on this list, if only because of the performance of Cate Blanchett. Here's a woman. I don't think she's a terrific comedic actress, but she wasn't required to be. She was playing a straight role in a Woody Allen comedy. And that's what made the movie particularly special and what made her performance special to me. And it's why it got on this
list.
What
about Andrew Dice Clay?
He wasn't bad in A Star Is Born.
Neither
either.
Was Alec Baldwin. I mean,
right.
You know, was it one of the best Woody Allen films? No. He made some of the best films of the 1970s and 1980s with Hannah and Her Sisters and
Annie Hall.
Annie
Crimes
Hall,
and
yes.
Misdemeanors.
Exactly. I mean, you know, so many movies. But Blue Jasmine made my list. What's your outlier,
Well,
Nathan?
The movie that I have on my list that's not on either of yours, and I'm pretty sure that this was the case when we reviewed it initially,
yes,
that
it
I was the only one in the room that liked it, but that is The Master by Paul Thomas Anderson. And this is a movie that the first time I saw it, I wasn't even sure if I liked it. I wasn't even sure if I knew what it was about or what it was trying to do. And if you haven't seen it or you don't remember, it's essentially a two-hander between Joaquin Phoenix and the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, giving two of maybe the best performances that they've ever given. And that's saying a lot.
And it's based upon real characters, right?
Yeah, it's sort of a fictional retelling of the birth of the Church of Scientology because Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, Lancaster Dodd, is certainly an avatar for L. Ron Hubbard. And he takes this character of Freddie, played by Joaquin Phoenix, under his wing. He's this guy that's just come out of the war, is clearly shell-shocked in more ways than one, is such an alcoholic that he's drinking at one point jet fuel from right out of the bottom of one of the airplanes that he's working on, and becomes essentially the right-hand man of this wannabe religious figure. And as the movie goes on, the ways in which their dynamic shifts is so fascinating to me. And it's done in this occasionally abstract, occasionally fantastical way by Paul Thomas Anderson. And by the end of the film, you realize that what you've seen is a really screwed up love story between two people that had no idea they were in a love story. And the fact that the Joaquin Phoenix character has found faith and has found idealism in this way of being, and the Philip Seymour Hoffman character has become almost completely jaded by it, is one of the great kind of switcheroos in modern film. And I think it's Paul Thomas Anderson is one of the great American filmmakers
working right now. No question, no argument.
And Phantom Thread was also close to making my top 10 list. But I think this movie is right up there with some of his masterpieces. I love it so much. And it changes every time I come back to it. It's a different movie every time.
Well, maybe I need to give this another try. Because
it's a challenging movie. Don't get me wrong.
Because I admired this movie and I appreciated the performances. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it was the theme, you know, but I usually gravitate toward like sort of wacky cult scenarios and so forth. So I don't know. There was just something about it that was off-putting to me.
Maybe it was
a
problem because there were so many of Scientology movies, including documentaries that came out today. For me, the problem is whenever Paul Thomas Anderson puts out a movie, he's always competing against himself. And this is a guy who made There Will Be Blood, one of the great films I've ever seen. And consequently, you know, every time I go, well, it ain't There Will Be Blood, it isn't There Will Be Blood, I have to go back and give The Master another chance.
Please do.
Because he is, without a doubt, one of the
master
top,
himself.
Exactly. One of the top five filmmakers who've ever worked in this medium.
And so, I think we're running out of time here. I think this is a perfect time for us to start running down our full list.
Why don't you run down your
list? Reveal the 10 choices you've made.
So on my top 10 list of films that made an impression on me, Roma, Boyhood, Moonlight, which the three of us agreed upon, my outlier, Bridesmaids, then A Separation, Before Midnight, Inside Out, O.J. Made in America, Searching for Sugar Man, and The Act of Killing. The last three are docs, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, there were no documentaries on my list, so yeah. I'm glad that you at least came around and filled that void.
Not mine either.
We can count on you for
that. That's right. So my top films of the past decade, besides Roma, Moonlight, and Boyhood, and Blue Jasmine, which I was my outlier, The Florida Project, Sean Baker's 2017 film, the Hungarian film Son of Saul from 2015, which is one of those movies that will rip your heart out, The Revenant, Alejandro González Iñárritu, Birdman, Alejandro González Iñárritu. Do you think that I like Mexican filmmakers?
You could have picked
Cuarón?
A better one.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. And, and Richard Linklater, Before Midnight, because it's the one that culminates his trilogy, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight.
On my list, too.
And the number one, Tree of Life, Terrence Malick, 2011. One of the great films that I've seen in my lifetime.
You know, I consider Tree of Life, it's sort of in my also-rans because I love it as well. I wonder if the movies he made immediately after that, which used the same style, maybe kind of almost cheapened that movie in a way in my mind. Because
right.
he's using the same techniques but for much lesser films.
Right. But I'm not sure that that's—
almost unwatchable
I'm
films.
Sure not that's a, that's not a reason to judge this
yeah, you're,
film.
Yeah, you're probably right. But maybe that is in my head. I need to go back to
not
it.
Not a Malick fan, just saying.
Well, I do love The Tree of Life. Yeah, I want to put that on the record. So here's
right,
my top
Nathan.
10. Okay, and there's a lot of outliers here. So I actually numbered mine. I'm going to go from 10 to 1.
Yeah,
how about
wow.
that?
Of course.
All right, I'm starting at 10 with Carol, the Todd Haynes film, also starring Cate Blanchett. Number 9. The Iranian film A Separation.
I had
yes,
that.
Number
yes.
8, my beloved Mad Max Fury Road by George Miller.
Yes,
number
yes.
7, my beloved Lady Bird by Greta Gerwig from last year. Number 6, David Fincher's The Social Network. 5, Richard Linklater's Boyhood. 4, the only Coen Brothers movie on any of our lists. That would be Inside Llewyn Davis. I love that movie. Number 3, Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master. Number 2, Barry Jenkins' Moonlight. And number 1, I think the best film of the last 10 years is Alfonso Cuarón's Roma. Doesn't get better than that as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
I mean, it's no Tree of Life, but Roma is quite
they have
a, good,
a lot in common.
Movie.
They have
yes,
a lot
they
in common.
Absolutely, they
well,
do.
I think we did a good job of sort of, you know, we had some foreign language films. We had some docs. I had an animation film, Inside Out.
And
so,
many of the films on your guys' list made my second list.
Same.
And, you know, I want to give a shout out to Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade. I really liked that movie.
I think that movie's going to last for
a
long time.
Yes, I do too. And I think we've come to the end of this special edition of Movies 101, in which I, Dan Webster, your host, along with Nathan Weinbinder and Mary Pat Truthart, ran down what we consider to be the best films of the past decade. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. And we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again try to separate cinema wheat from cinema chaff. Until then, remember this quote from a guy who didn't make our list, Quentin Tarantino. When people ask me if I went to film school, I tell them, no, I went to films. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.